Welcome back to Business Matters with me, Roger Hearing, and my guest today, Alison van Diggelen and Simon Long. Now, if you thought how many women there are in the new high-tech industries that we've got so used to, not enough, I think, is the general verdict of a lot of people in those industries. Have a quick listen to this.
Welcome to Google I.O. and welcome to Showline. It feels really nice and different up here. We've been doing it for many, many years in Moscone, and in fact, we've been doing I.O. for 10 years, but I feel we are at a pivotal moment in terms of where we are going as a company and felt appropriate to change the venue. Doing it here also allows us to include a lot more of you. There are over 7,000 of you joining in person today.
Well, that was the boss of Google, Sundar Pichai, opening a recent conference held near the tech giant's headquarters in Mountain View, Silicon Valley. Alison, you were at that conference, so just tell us a bit more about it.
Sure. Happy to do it, Roger. Google I.O. is the annual developers conference. I.O. stands for Input Output and Innovation in the Open. It attracts thousands of developers from around the world who use Google's open platforms such as Android and Chrome to build apps for your smartphone, your smartwatch, or your computer. Google has been battling, however, to increase the number of women in its tech teams, and I was pleased to see a decent number of women making presentations on the keynote stage. The company has actually managed to triple the number of women attending the conference by partnering with other tech organizations like the Anita Borg Institute, Women Who Code, and Hackbright Academy. At the conference, I spoke with Natalie Villalobos. She's Google's head of global programs for women tech makers. I began by asking her why Google is seeking more women in tech.
We need everyone present in the industry to contribute and make the most innovative technology. So the more diverse voices we have contributing, participating, and building technology, the better technology we're going to have. We always need more diverse voices at the table, and I think that we need that for women, we need that for people of color, we need that from veterans, people with disabilities. Because the people that are building the technology should be as diverse as the people that the technology serves.
You went from 8% female attendance 2013 to 23%, almost a quarter today. How did you do that?
What could only Google do is a big rallying cry of my work. And it was partnering with these community organizations, both locally, nationally, and internationally, to bring women to the conference by providing travel grants, access to tickets. And so we wanted to create these lasting partnerships. And one of the things that we've worked really hard at is how can we actually engage women across the spectrum, whether you identify as non-gender binary or identify as a woman of color, as many different types of women from different backgrounds, races, geographic diversity. I mean, we have women from South Africa, Taiwan, Tunisia, China. And a lot of these women are coming here to the U.S. for the first time for Google I.O.
What makes you guys special? Is it just you've got deep pockets?
We're really looking at how can we engage and meet developers and designers and entrepreneurs wherever they are. Because diversity and inclusion in the tech industry is not just in the United States. There are people all over the world who want to be here in this industry who can't move to Silicon Valley. So how can we meet them where they are and share our new platforms, our technologies. So those who can't come to Mountain View can join a local I.O. extended event. I believe we have over 400. And I think our biggest this year is actually in Sri Lanka with over 2,000 attendees. It's about reshaping the industry and supporting people where they are.
Natalie Villalobos there, Google's head of global programs for women tech makers. Alison, we've heard this a lot before. We've heard people say there aren't enough women involved in high-tech industries, and we've heard talk about inclusion, diversity. I was just noting down the terms and thinking, this is military, but it doesn't seem to get any better.
It seems to be moving in the right direction, but it's very slow going. I actually had a chance to speak with the Google CEO, Sundar Pichai, after his keynote, and he said that this is a long, long road. He's talking about 10 years, 15 years before they can get close to equality in this space. It's a pipeline issue. It's a role model issue. There are inherent biases in companies in Silicon Valley and around the world that make it more difficult for women to get into tech companies and thrive in tech companies. But he did point out an encouraging fact that at Stanford University, where I am right now, actually the Stanford studio in Silicon Valley, for women, the most popular major right now as of 2015 is no longer biology, which it was for many years, it's actually computer science. So anecdotal evidence like that is, you know, I'm hearing more of this anecdotal evidence that we're reaching perhaps a critical mass, perhaps a turning point where women can feel at home in that geeky computer science world.
Yeah, let me posit that maybe that's because it's Stanford and because it's California. I mean, Simon, let me come to you. Is there, in the high-tech industries where you, in the part of the world where you are, some of the most cutting-edge stuff going on, are many women involved?
No. I mean, I'm struck when I visit both the offices of multinationals like Google, and as well as local startups, how dominated they are, well, obviously by the young, which I being my age, I notice, but also by men. And clearly, Alison's put her finger on one of the main problems, particularly in the tech industry, is who's studying what at university, who has the right skills. But on top of that, there are these ingrained prejudices, biases, which people are not even aware of, which in so many industries lead to people recruiting people who are ultimately like themselves. And since they're predominantly men, that continues.
But they see that Simon, is one of the oddities, I think, of this in a way, because philosophically you think, well, yes, in the past, the assumption has been with industries from the past, because they were in a patriarchal age, they would naturally favour men. But the whole point of the tech industry is it's of the modern age when, in theory at least, equality is much better. So, Simon, why is it that women, that girls, are not attracted to things that don't, you know, not the traditional idea that, oh, men can only the ones who do heavy lifting or whatever it is. It's not like that at all. So why is it so pushed towards men?
Well, I think you have to go back to school, don't you, and look at what makes people take choices in their early to mid-teens that are going to dictate what they do at university and hence dictate their career choices. And I think, I don't know the data, but I think you would still find a predominance of men doing computer sciences, hard sciences, compared with women doing humanities and biology. That must be where the initial problem lies. And if the pipeline, it is a long pipeline, if that is changing at the school level, then in a few years one might see change at the institution.
But you don't see that change right now where you are, Sam?
I don't notice it in businesses that I visit, no. Mm.
So, Alison, let me come back on that philosophical point, because I think it is a key one. Now, I'm not going to guess your age or anything like that, but when you were at school, was there active discouragement of girls going into that kind of thing, in terms of university choices? I mean, why didn't you choose computer science?
That's a very good question. I did one computer science course and it just about killed me just doing a compound interest program.
Why? Why was that?
So it was just the way my mind is wired. There was an awful lot of effort with very short, small reward. But I would point out that the pipeline issue is not the whole excuse. I did speak with Ellie Powers, and she's been at Google for 4 years. She's a senior product manager. She was actually on the keynote stage talking. And I asked her about the pipeline issue, in fact, and she said it's a lazy excuse. She said, and she said, and I quote, "If you're looking for gold, it's a rarer thing. You're going to have to look harder. You have to figure out how to find and connect with people outside your immediate network." So she kind of put a challenge out there to people within Google and beyond, for any company that's looking for women in order to make a better team.
But then the suggestion is that, in fact, what the problem is that perhaps the girls, the women, are not there, that they haven't been that interested. If it's not a pipeline issue, it's not they're coming along in time, perhaps they just still are not, they have the same problem you had you were saying there about the amount of effort to the amount of reward, some philosophical way in which, for some reason, they don't want to do it? Or is it the cultural bias?
I think there is a bias relevant, but I think there's also the stereotype of the geeky coder, if you like. But I think that's changing. I'm really, you know, after spending time and being at that conference for an entire day and seeing about one in four of the people attending were women. And it was different from other tech conferences I've been at, where it feels like about 10%. So I think this unconscious bias training that they're doing at Google and other companies, I think that's going to help. I think role models like Ellie Powers, who's up there on stage wearing a dress, talking tech, being geeky, I think that kind of person is going to help get more young women or people to retrain and say, hey, maybe coding is for me. Maybe computer science is for me.
Simon, I'm going to be really controversial and say, does it matter? Does it matter whether what the gender bias is in the technology industry?
I think it probably does, just on the basic principle that if everybody had equal access to do what they're good at, the world would be a better place. And that, as Alison was saying, if the problem is not just a pipeline one, and that there are inherent cultural and other biases that are inhibiting women from doing as well as they might, then of course it matters and we're all losing out.
But I suppose the reason I'm saying does it matter is because will it make a difference to the world, with the business of technology, if there are, I suppose we're used to the ways in which computers and technology is driven and developed. Would it materially change, do you think, Simon, if women were more involved in the way in which it was happening?
Yes, but in ways that I can't possibly predict. I mean, don't you think it would change, Roger?
Well, Alison, I should be asking you on this. I mean, Do you think, you know, we talked about culture here, but is, you know, if women were involved in designing, I don't know, the Apple Mac, would it look different? Would it be different? Would it function differently? Would it be a better thing?
Well, I think Natalie's point about if you are designing, if your end product is for the world, 50% of which is women, you have to include women in the process. So by attracting a more diverse employee base, you will get a better workforce. I actually talked with Stephen Levy, who is a well-known tech commentator and author here. He's been at the Google I.O. for the last 10 years since they started, and he's seen this change. And he said to me, and I think he's absolutely right, the days where a credible company can have an all-men panel or an all-men conference are just way over, as he says. He said it's about sending a message to all people that they're welcome, and that's going to get companies a better workforce and better products. So I think that's the bottom line.
Well, we'll see if that all comes to pass. Let's take a quick break to bring ourselves up to date with the headlines with Julie Candler.